From KQED Public Radio and the California Report, this is the Capital Notes Podcast. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Merry New Year.
He's back. Wait a minute. Yes. Actually, both Jerry's back and Anthony's back.
Hey, I haven't missed a podcast all year.
Nice. Yeah. Very nice. This is the podcast for January 7th. I'm John Myers from KQED. That voice, long missing from the podcast.
Yep.
Is Anthony York of the Los Angeles Times.
But my voice is tanned, rested, and ready.
Nice. So how is your son, by the way? Congratulations.
Fantastic. Thank you very much.
Tell the podcast world how he is.
He's a perfect little, perfect thing.
Little Griffin.
Little Griffin.
Yep. Is he going to be Griff or is he going to be Griffin?
Who knows, man?
To be determined.
Yeah. G-Money. Who knows?
G-Money. Because his father's rolling in the money as a
right.
journalist, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
He's going to be... There will be no college fund for that kid.
Yeah.
Mine can tell you that story.
Okay.
Well, welcome back. And thanks to all the podcast folks for listening to us. And I actually, while you were gone, I sent out this note asking them about what day they like to hear it. You know, was Friday better than sometime of the week? You know, what was the value in even doing the podcast? And lo and behold, Anthony.
What'd they say?
Scores of people emailed me.
That they like it on Friday?
Maybe a score.
Uh-huh.
So it's a score is 20,
right? Yeah.
Friday they like. They yeah. like you. They I like guess you. They sort of like me, and they like
Monist.
It. They like listening to this.
Well, here it is on a Friday.
Here
with
it
us.
Is. Here you are.
Colonel Mustard in the conservatory.
With the candlestick.
Yes.
So with that very strange transition.
speaking of Colonel Mustard.
Speaking of strange transitions, Jerry Brown, yes. the 39th governor of the state of California, took the oath of office on Monday.
Wasn't he also the 34th?
He was.
Okay.
Which I guess the average there is 37, 36 and a half.
Which makes him something between Pete Wilson and Gray Davis.
We're trying to find his place in history. So Brown took the oath of office and then went to work, and we have been following his breakneck pace this week.
Mm-hmm.
Other things will happen by the time you hear this podcast, no doubt. That's the way that this office seems to be going. Things, tidbits of news trickle out all the time.
Yes, something
and
they, like
and they're
that.
All and they're all kind of tidbits. I mean, we're still waiting for the big shoe. The big shoe is on Monday when the budget comes out.
Yes.
So, Anthony, out of all the things that have happened this week, let's start this way. What do you think is the most interesting to you? What was most interesting out of the big Jerry is back cavalcade?
I think it's for me, it's really more of a meta thing. It's kind of the end of the imperial governorship a little bit. I mean, look, this governor has been around all week. You never have to ask if he's in town. I mean, he's here. He's running around. He's running around the Capitol. I mean, I've run into him twice in the halls. You know, that just didn't happen with Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Now, the hallways aren't closed off like they were with Schwarzenegger.
No, there's no velvet rope. There's no kids clamoring to try
Brown
to get his autograph.
Brown has been photographed quite well, walking to work from his apartment,
with
from his
dog,
studio.
His loft.
From his loft, sorry.
Yes.
Is that what you call it now? You call it a loft.
That's a loft.
It's a Tony thing.
When the ceilings are above, when you have cement floors, I think it's a loft.
It's a loft.
Yeah.
Walking to work from the from there to the Capitol, jogging on the American River Parkway in Sacramento, with a single or couple highway patrol officers, not the entourage of Arnold, not
right.
the phalanx of black SUVs. It's not to say he's not going to have times where more security is needed.
And
certainly we're not saying that they're taking
right.
security for granted, but just to get into your point, trying to flesh that out, that there's a feel of though there's an approachability with him
right.
that was not there with Schwarzenegger.
And also, you know, for students of diplomacy, right? I mean, Brown's been running around the Capitol. He walks into the legislators' offices. I mean, it's not like he summons them to the governor's office and needs to have the home field advantage. He, I think, earlier this week...
Didn't walk over, but went over to the State Association of Counties on Tuesday and
right.
met with them in their building.
Right, and then later that day was in the Speaker's office and the Pro Tem's office and then the two Republican leaders' office, just walking around the halls. And, you know, if you catch him in the hallways, he'll talk to you. He told me how much he disliked something I had written that morning. So,
oh, yeah?
So you know.
What did he not like?
You know, he didn't like the implication, or he didn't like the mention of Prop 13.
Uh-huh.
Which he talked about earlier this week, which
yes.
we can talk
we'll
about.
We'll get there
soon.
In a moment. We'll get there in a moment.
So for me, I mean, that's the biggest change. Without any big news, without seeing any major policy proposals, I think the only thing that can be different now is sort of the textural stuff, if you will, you know, and that the temperature is noticeably different. I mean, I don't know if you feel that
it,
as well.
It is, and I was going to say, I mean, I think your meta narrative outline there is one I would agree with too. I'd say that's probably the biggest change. I mean, they're little flashes of things that I found interesting all week long. I think it's on that same track. This notion from Brown and those close to him, to those of us in the press, of just relax. We'll get there. We'll get it all done. Some of that is fair. I mean, I think we are fairly amped up. There's an amping of the press when a new administration comes in, where you've got to write all of these things.
Right. When you starve a beast, the beast gets hungry.
Some of that is a leftover from the Schwarzenegger era, the way we dealt with them, the way they gave us information. We're going to have to transition. But I thought some of that too was a convenient spin on their part to try to continue to portray what's going on is no big deal, the slowness of things. And I'm not saying it's a huge deal that things have been slow and kind of out there in different ways. But at a certain point, you know, I think the press and the public's going to want to know what's going on. Granted,
right.
Monday
Absolutely.
Will be the big day, and
Absolutely.
So let's hold our fire until then. But it's been challenging as a reporter.
Absolutely, and this is not a turnkey operation. I mean, they had one deputy press secretary who was finally named deputy press secretary yesterday.
Congratulations, Evan.
Sort of holding down the fort, you know, for all of us who've been calling,
and some holdouts from other places.
Right. And now they have a communications staff in place. But also, Brown is very consciously restructuring the horseshoe, the governor's office. He's not going to have a chief of staff, and now this is not unprecedented.
Right. Well, let's get to all of that.
But I do think that as a lead in, I mean, that's sort of what part of what we're reacting to is that Brown is he's not just filling vacancies; he's restructuring some of the inner workings of the governor's office. And I think, you know, the larger idea is that we're going from an administration that was perhaps the most staff-driven in California history, with the chief of staff who was often seen as the de facto governor. We're going from that into an administration where the governor's in charge and the staff works for the governor. And I think that that's very clear. And that's clear in the choosing of the titles and the people he's surrounding himself with and the way that he's conducting his business.
It's almost in a way, if you look from Davis to Brown just for a moment, there was a structure with Davis. It was a pretty structured administration, as I remember covering.
Right.
It got more structured and layered with Schwarzenegger.
Right.
Thank you. And now we're breaking through both layers of structure, right. It seems like, of those two previous governors in a way.
Right. Now, this idea of not having a chief of staff, Governor Brown yesterday named two executive secretaries, Nancy McFadden and Jim Humes. Remember, Gray Davis tried to do something like this when he came into office. He named Lynn Shank and Vince Hall as sort of co-senior aides, right?
Right.
That didn't work out so well. There was sort of a power vacuum there, and Shank sort of emerged as the top aide. I'm not sure that that's going to happen in this administration.
Well, and McFadden was in the middle of that role, too, there towards the end as well.
So, Susan Kennedy.
Yeah, so exactly. Susan Kennedy of Davis and Schwarzenegger
secretary.
Eras. Right. So the whole thing, for those of you who didn't get it, you know, the executive secretary is what in statute the chief of staff position was called. It's what it used to be called before Brown was the first person who made somebody chief of staff in Gray Davis.
Right. Although Gray Davis's first title, I went back and looked in the Blue Book yesterday. It was executive secretary and chief of staff.
I guess at some point he was made chief of staff, is my point, during the administration.
Right.
But Brown was the first one who used it, so he said he wasn't going to use it. We kind of thought that there was all this clamor and kerfuffle. I think we've used kerfuffle in the podcast too many times.
Not this year, we haven't.
Well, but there, you know, was all of this was his wife, First Lady Ann Gust Brown, going to be the de facto chief of staff or the executive secretary? There was a thing on the web that said her name as chief of staff that you reported on. And
right.
Who knows who the hell put
that
up?
Right.
Well,
right.
We don't know who put it up.
Right.
Still.
Exactly.
And who cares?
Exactly.
What's that?
Nothing.
She is not. Though, again, my favorite title of anybody ever in state government so far may be she's special counsel.
Special counsel.
If ever there was a special counsel to Governor Jerry Brown, it would be his wife.
I don't know if you want anybody else to fill the the duties associated with Oahu.
Tell him the truth. It's clean up after him in the apartment. Oh, sorry.
That's,
the
right,
loft.
That's right. That's right.
But special counsel, I mean, and she clearly is. She is. They are a team, and she has been instrumental in his time as attorney general, in his time running the campaign for governor, and now, of course, it's going to be a sharp mind there in the horseshoe. So, but McFadden and Humes, Jim Humes comes from the attorney general's office where he worked for Brown. Nancy McFadden, we've laid out, worked for Gray Davis.
And PG&E.
Also recently of PG&E. They're going to be running things over there. We got a slew. We got a few cabinet positions. John Laird, former Democratic assemblyman who was a budget chairman from Santa Cruz, is the natural resources secretary.
Right.
Marty Morgenstern, who was worked for Brown and Gray Davis, is going to be secretary of labor. Mary Nichols at the State Air Resources Board will stay on. I'm just trying to run through these really quickly.
Uh-huh. And who are we missing? We already had Diana Dooley, and
we had Budget and Health and Human Services from before the inauguration.
And then there were a slew of appointments to the Board of Education.
Yeah, a slew, which would have gone unnoticed had not for one of the names been familiar to several people.
Yes.
And it wouldn't have gone completely unnoticed, I want to be fair. Some of these people are well known in education circles. One of them is probably going to be the president of the State Board of Education. But the name that we all picked up on was Bill Honig,
right,
who was the superintendent of public instruction, which is elected by the voters, you'll remember, for 10 years in the 80s and resigned in 1993 after being convicted of conflict of interest, of breaking conflict of interest laws regarding state contracts being sent to a firm owned by his wife. Exactly. And so you haven't heard from Honig on that scene for a while. He's been in education circles in Marin County and other, I think, a think tank in education for a while. But that got a lot of
eyebrows
raised.
Sure, it's a familiar name.
Yeah, exactly. But also because of, you know, the taint of whatever that was with Honig and Brown in one of these impromptu chats in the hall, I guess, you know, said people, I don't worry about it, effectively, right?
Well, there are people who believe that the case against Honig was politically motivated. Honig was a very outspoken advocate as superintendent, wrestled mightily with Governors Duke Majan and Wilson. Wilson even created a new education secretary to try to undermine Honig's authority. So Honig didn't play well with Republican governors, and there are those who have implied that the case against Honig was politically motivated. I don't know enough about it to speak to that, although I guess I just did.
And in the perfect symmetry of the world, from what you wrote, you've already found out that Governor Brown is, and he hinted at this during the campaign, is going to eliminate that job of Secretary of Education, which was an internal governor's office advisor on education, created specifically when he had problems with Bill Honig.
And now Honig's back.
Wilson had problems with Bill Honig.
Exactly. So we can close that particular circle. We'll see how many other circles we are closing throughout the Brown administration here.
Yeah, indeed. Also, to all of the appointees so far, Democrats.
Every single one, and 21 of them.
And some people have wondered. I mean, Schwarzenegger sprinkled Republicans and Democrats. Some Republicans would have liked more Republicans, but that's another story. All Democrats. Don't know what we make of that. I mean, you know, he's going with people he knows.
Right. And we'll see. I mean, I think that maybe the next waves, we might see some Republicans, perhaps some agency secretaries will be asked to stay on who are Republicans. It remains to be seen. But I do think if this is an all-Democratic government, that will become, you know, whether it means anything is one thing, but it will become part of the narrative. And especially as we get into the legislative session and start talking about the budget and talk about the need for bipartisan cooperation, that if this is a pre-partisan, you know, instead of Schwarzenegger's post-partisan administration, if this is a more partisan administration in makeup, at least, that could become part of the narrative. But I don't think, you know, just because they're all Democrats, it's not like they're all screaming liberals, you know.
And the whole bipartisan, postpartisan, let's work together, whatever we want to call it thing.
How'd that work out?
Really was it? Well, no, but hey, well, yeah. But no, but there was very much a theme of that in his inaugural speech.
Right.
And I wanted to talk about that for a moment because there was a lot of you know, let's do what's right for California. Let's be loyal to California. Devotion to California, I think.
Sacrifice
as he said it.
For California.
A lot of history lessons about pioneers and
Wagons in the Desert.
Yeah, yes. You've never heard Schwarzenegger talk about Josiah Royce.
No.
Philosopher from Placer County in the post-Gold Rush era. You know, it was an interesting speech. It was I think a lot's already been said about it, but you tell me your take. I mean, I thought it was you know, it had some humor.
Yeah.
It had you know, it was very quintessential Jerry.
Except that there were prepared remarks.
But they were barely prepared. I mean, you know, they were not distributed to the press. They weren't on a teleprompter. He kind of riffed a little bit. It seemed like at one point lost his. No,
they were handed out during the speech.
They were.
You didn't get a hard copy.
I didn't get a hard copy.
I've got one for you.
I'll call the press office. Okay. I'm sure they can.
Now
get
there
me
is
one.
Yes.
But it was, you know, it was somewhat muted in tone, and probably, you know, the pundit class says it hit the right tone.
Sure. Hey, why not? I mean, I really think that the speech he makes next Monday, you know, on the budget will be the one that really sets the tone for this year.
And
I
we have no date for a State of the State speech
no,
at this point.
We know there will be one, and it will be after January 10th.
Yeah.
But no date.
I'm not even convinced there will be one, but you feel confident.
The governor's office has, for what it's worth, indicated that there will be one.
I, for one, would be fine if we didn't have one because it's a lot of extra work for me.
Amen.
And, I mean, what else is he going to talk about? The budget, the budget, the budget, and the budget.
Yep.
And speaking of the budget, so we'll get the budget on Monday. Lots of chatter, lots of little small leaks of people who've heard X, Y, and Z. It appears as though the deficit number he's going to use is $25
billion. Right.
And we'll have to find. Yeah, the frustrating part for me then is how do you explain to the public what's happened? It's not like things are better all of a sudden. It's just better data from what I can tell from what I've heard. So a $25 billion problem.
Between now and June 30th of next year.
Yeah, year and a half. Thank you, Governor Schwarzenegger. Make sure that the press doesn't lie to people. I haven't forgotten that one. Little snippets of things, you know, lots of cuts. A still-to-be-somewhat-determined program to shift some responsibility and funding of some programs back to the counties and other locals. Some kind of interesting and sure-to-be-controversial element involving a change in redevelopment agencies across the state. Probably some taking of some money, some shrinking, some something there that's sure to be controversial. I don't know what the details are. Mm-hmm. You may know more than I do.
You know, I've heard some, but I don't know many. But I think the big thing, of course, and maybe this you were saving this one for last, is the you know, all indications are there will be a call to maintain current or recent increases in taxes on sales, income, and vehicles,
and to ask voters
in a special election.
Ask voters to do all that in a special election sometime in late spring, early summer, which that covers my keister on June, because that's technically spring and summer.
Right.
And attached somehow to, you know, some of the chatter and repeated again here on Thursday by education advocates. I went over to a thing that they were doing. Attached somehow to schools and trying to make the point to the voters that without these taxes, schools are going to get cut.
Right. Well, you're talking about roughly $8 billion in taxes and those increases in sales, income, and vehicle, you know, some of the vehicle license fee has already been earmarked for public safety and locals. You know, does that mean that if these taxes are not increased, that schools will take a $7 billion cut?
But $2 billion.
Maybe.
So, I mean, who knows?
That might be the focus of the campaign.
You felt that campaign starting this here on Thursday. That's what I was going to say, because the new superintendent of public instruction, Tom Torlakson, had an event with a lot of the Education Coalition people, and we're already talking about the campaign to come. You know, so worst kept secret in town, special election in 2011. Talking about the campaign to come, making that case, talking about $18 billion in cuts over the years, and you know, and so I felt the beginning of the campaign starting to unfold there in that way.
Right. Right. And it'll be what will be interesting, too, is how this campaign works. Remember, Brown and the unions worked in tandem during the campaign,
during the gubernatorial campaign.
But they were parallel campaigns. Right. So now, I mean, maybe this is really inside baseball stuff, but
this podcast is all about.
But, you know, how is this going to work? I mean, if CTA is going to write a $5 million check or a $10 million check for this campaign, Are they going to let Brown control the message? I mean, how much coordination will there be? Will there be divergent groups, you know, talking about different things? And I think some of those mechanics of the campaign are going to be really interesting, some of those decisions as it begins.
Let's attach the cart to the horse first for a moment, because we also had this week a shot over the bow to any Republicans who would consider putting this on the ballot, a vote to put the tax issue on the ballot from Grover Norquist, people who said with the no taxes pledge, and that this will violate your no new taxes pledge if you vote to put this in front of the voters.
When did Norquist, he's named himself interpreter of the no new taxes pledges?
I guess because he's the one who wrote it in his organization. Yeah, so, but that presents a very early political challenge.
Well, assuming all Democrats go for it, remember there are you need two Republicans in each House to support this plan,
right,
to put it on the ballot.
Let's see how many didn't sign the pledge.
I think zero.
Two.
Really?
Sam Blakesley didn't sign the pledge, I believe.
Huh.
Actually, maybe, and then I think there was another in the Senate, but I can't remember now.
Well, Blakesley's in the Senate.
Yeah, this was all chatter, but anyway, that still doesn't get you there.
And Brown is not just meeting with the legislative leadership; he's meeting with individual legislators as well, trying to build relationships. And so, we could see the governor trying to go around the legislative leadership to try to move this thing to the ballot. I mean, we'll see. We'll see what kind of negotiating chops he has once. But it sounds like this is going to be a sprint. I mean, the indications are that Brown wants a budget, some sort of austerity budget, to be passed within 60 days, as he said.
And that goes to the timeline of the election and
right,
calling an election and all of that.
Of course, if that budget doesn't have any taxes in it, you only need simple majorities. You don't need a two-thirds to pass that budget now, thanks to Prop 25. But still, putting things on the ballot will require a two-thirds vote, unless they get involved in some
special shenanigans. Yeah, I've heard
special
something,
session,
right,
or modifying an existing initiative that has been passed by voters. So if you want to say that the sales tax increase is really a modification of Prop 172, good luck.
Welcome.
But that's exactly the kind of thing Brown has said he doesn't want,
right,
to do.
Right. I think that would qualify as gimmicks, as smoke and mirrors,
yeah,
as not honest budgeting in a way. It may be that, right. I mean, I think that's a great point. It may not be the actual budget itself, but it's the process that the voters have come to be,
right,
soured on.
Right.
And speaking of things that leave a strange taste, a strange feeling.
Residue.
Yeah, let's end with a brief moment of the Avidazain to Governor Schwarzenegger. And the governor's parting goodbye. While officially it was a YouTube video where he said, "I've loved this job," a slew of 11th hour appointments, some pardons of ex-convicts, and some commutations of sentences of people currently serving time in prison.
Right. All of which were controversial.
We can go through the list a little bit, but in the public safety arena, prisoners and ex-cons, the most controversial was a shortening of the sentence, of the voluntary manslaughter sentence, for Esteban Nunez, who is the son of former Assembly Speaker Fabian Nunez, who was serving 16 years for voluntary manslaughter and the stabbing death of a college student in San Diego.
Right.
Schwarzenegger cut it to 7 with an explanation that apparently no one seems to like, because, I mean, he's been widely panned on that one.
Yeah.
And then on appointments, he made some 11th hour appointments of political friends, of spouses of political friends.
Right.
Even some people who were not political friends, the Carol Migdon appointment will continue to
baffle the ALRB. I mean, of all the things, to Agriculture Labor Relations Board. Carol Migdon, who in the Senate carried the card check.
Democratic state senator, former from Marin County.
San Francisco, Marin County. Carried legislation to make it easier for farm workers to unionize year after year. Schwarzenegger vetoed it year after year. And now he gave her a plum appointment to the Agriculture Labor Relations Board.
But she's also a close friend, a close associate of Susan Kennedy, the governor's,
right,
ex-governor's chief of staff.
Right.
Susan Kennedy's spouse got two
appointments, the medical board, and what was the other one? Unemployment insurance? No.
But it adds
it's one
up
of
the
110s. So
it adds up to a good chunk of change.
$160,000 yeah. total, roughly.
Another spouse of another former a person, two ex-lawmakers, Roy Ashburn and Dennis Hollingsworth, Republicans from the
state together
Senate.
On the unemployment insurance
on
board.
On the unemployment appeals board. Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are good times.
Yeah.
A lot of this, presidents do it. They make 11th hour decisions. They use that right. power that can't be gone around in most cases a lot of times. But I did agree with, and I don't know who wrote it. Someone smart wrote it.
You can just say I didn't write it.
Well,
that's fine.
Well, but it was a columnist. But I do agree with the how do you square that with the Arnold the reformer, Arnold the people hate politics right. as usual, and this is classic politics.
This is it. I mean, it doesn't get any more political than that. So yeah,
especially a commutation of a manslaughter sentence where you have the victim's family outraged,
and a lot of similar people serving similar sentences whose parole the governor has denied.
Right.
Or
commutations that might have been applied for.
Sure.
And by the way, we'll never know what those are, because one of the things that I remembered during all of that is that, a governor's files are all transferred to the state archives. Well, the one part that is sealed are all of the appeals for clemency and all of these. So you can't even really go back to see, but you have to believe a lot of people asked for help of cases of people wrongly accused or wrongly sentenced that the governor said no,
right.
but not to these.
Right. The clemency hearings are sealed. There are similar people serving similar sentences who have come up for parole those are public, apparently.
Right.
As we'll read tomorrow or today.
Ah, yes.
Yes.
And then the last 90 seconds here. 90 seconds on the Arnold Schwarzenegger legacy. Anthony York, go. good.
Yeah. Seriously, I obviously a mixed bag. I think that among insiders, some of these last-minute moves, especially the commuting of the Esteban Nunez sentence, really do leave sort of a sour taste in people's mouths. Hypocrisy is the ultimate sin in politics, right? I mean, that's really the one that gets you. And I think Schwarzenegger, on his way out the door, opened himself up to a lot of that criticism.
And I think in a broader vein with the former governor, you're absolutely right. Hypocrisy is what political journalists look for all the time. There were lots of things that maybe you wouldn't call quite hypocrisy, but were hard to square with the facts. Schwarzenegger, the salesman, liked the sales pitch, and he wanted the sales pitch to be the thing that the public paid attention to, even when the sales pitch didn't quite meet with what was really going on. Either either he oversold something, or he said it was X, and it was really kind of X minus about a half, and I feel like that there were a lot of those things, and that does go back to the new governor, the current governor, Jerry Brown's mission to try to instill a bit of "can we all just agree on what we're talking about?"
Right.
kind of mentality to politics in the state, because the ex-governor really liked to have it a different way, and I think we saw that in the budget. We saw that in all the things that he said were fantastic all the time, and they really weren't. And the question is now: can you get the public dialed back in to believe you when you say something is great or bad or so-so?
Right. So.
So,
and with that.
So next week, we'll talk about the budget.
We'll do this again.
We'll have a good time. We'll see what everything is. We'll have an exciting budget-orama.
We'll be in mid-sprint by then.
Mid-sprint in the second week of January. Gotta love it.
Yep.
Well, that's Anthony York, proud papa.
Indeed.
From the Los Angeles Times, I'm John Myers from KQED. Also a proud papa. I had to say it for my kids. See you next time.